Welcome back to Why Wait, the Rise of Real Analytics podcast. We invite engineering, business thought leaders, and analytics specialists to share their stories with the world, providing insights into what your peers are doing to improve data and application analytics. I'm your host, Gio Tropiano of Rockset. I'm here with my co-host, Dhruba Borkathor, the co-founder and CTO of Rockset. Thank you again for being here with me, sir. Before I introduce our guest today, if you have any questions or comments of today's podcasts, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you at community.rockset.com or tweet at us at Rockset Cloud on Twitter. With us today is Yandong Lu, the co-founder and CTO of Connectly.ai, a Silicon Valley conversational commerce platform, enabling businesses to communicate with their customers via SMS, WhatsApp, and Messenger. Prior to Connectly, Yandong was CTO of Strava, where he was responsible for the technical efforts focused on data and machine learning. And prior to Strava, he held the title of VP of Engineering at NetEase. And he also led architecture development of the machine learning platform at Uber. So no big deal at all. Just another day in the life of Yandong. Welcome, a warm welcome to you from the Why Wait podcast. Thanks for being with us. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being with us. I'm going to kick it off with just really quick, the first question. You know, you've worked with data modeling for a long time, Yandong. Please describe the importance of semi-structured data in dealing with streaming events. Like, how do you deal with records in a data set that's partial or damaged? Like, what tools do you use to clean up data before models can be built on them? I know there's a lot of questions here, but how long is the delay from when the data actually arrives to the time when it can be used for modeling?
Arguably today, it's really difficult to build a successful business without having good data. Depending on the nature of the business and what kind of core value you're providing to your customers, data can really play an important role. For all the companies I've worked at, I see data really forms the foundation of the business, including Connectly, Strava, Uber, et cetera. For example, at Strava, it's all about logging your running and cycling data, then coupled with GPS, weather, terrain, maps data. We're going to turn that into a beautiful drawing with some nice stats for your activities, which you can look at later. And Connectly, we integrate with all top messaging platforms, such as WhatsApp, Messenger, SMS, also the rest of the world. It could be something different. And also payment tools so that we can then analyze the communication between business and the customers. And the will makes various business decisions to, it can be prioritizing a certain conversation, automating the work, or just re-engaging the customers in an automatic fashion. So speaking of bad, damaged, or partial data, that always happens. For example, Strava apps, it works with Strava app, it works with hundreds of different wearable devices. And you can imagine they all report, you know, very different data in their own way. They're probably using different sensors. Even for two people that were wearing, running next to each other because they are wearing different devices, and the quality of the data can vary significantly, right? So this also applies to other types of data, the time, distance, elevation, heart rate, right? So the data is always not 100% reliable. And we're probably gonna run into similar issues regarding data and Connectly as well, as we're, you know, adding users over time. So there can be different treatment of the bad data or partial data. You can ignore the data. If you find the data is just, you know, bad due to, for example, a sensor malfunction, it's probably just, you know, damaged from the very beginning. You can choose to just throw away the data because there's no way to recover it. Or you can sensitize it because you have other multiple streams of similar data. You can probably using some external additional signal, for example, the GPS streaming. You have the GPS coordinates, but you also have OpenStreetMaps, other external signals, you can help recover, correct the data, or you can look up the data, right? Weather, you can always get weather data from some other website and go back to the point in time and recover the data. There's just a few examples of what you can do with the data. And you ask about the delay. I think ideally you want the data latency to be as low as possible, but also it's a decision. It's sometimes it's not only a technical decision, but also business decision. You have to make depending on the nature of the job, the user experience, how low the latency you like it to be, and how much resources you could afford. For example, our latency is fairly low. It's milliseconds, a few milliseconds, because we are starting with a super scalable and highly performant architecture. We're using Golang as the backend programming language, and we're also using some of the event-driven architecture. So everything is super fast, but also we're small today. So I'm pretty sure the challenge we'll get some challenge later on. I remember at Uber working at its machine learning platform, our P99 delay was as low as less than the 100 milliseconds. P99 meaning 99% of the time, the delay was sub 100 milliseconds. That's actually pretty nice, especially for some online predicting job. You want the model to make a decision right there for the user, so essentially they don't feel like a lag between the data arrival to the user experience. But in some of the cases, the delay, you have to further lower the latency. For example, self-driving, or there's two parts where it's offline training. You can probably take as long as you want, because you want to absorb that large volume of data and turn that into a high performance models. But online, imagine that you have sensors, the cameras that capture the data, and you would like the delay from the moment they capture the, whether it's image or sound or some other laser input, to a decision, right? To whether you just keep driving or stop or make a break or just turn, you would like that latency to be extremely low. So there you probably have to make some trade-off between the hardware specs and the latency, so that you can get to that. So that's important, something you cannot sacrifice. So that's, eventually it's a combination of both technical and business.
Thanks for describing that, Yangdong. I think I have worked with you, or I have known you for a long time now, especially the time when you were building that Michelangelo at Uber. That was, as far as I understand, I read about it when you published blog posts about that piece of software. It's great. I know that it uses a large kind of machine learning on large data sets, and it produces good models and refines them over time, right? Could you tell me a little bit about how do you deploy these models into production? Like, let's say at Uber, you are using Michelangelo to build large models. Now, building is one problem, but then putting them in production or deploying it to serving useful real users traffic is sometimes challenging and difficult. So how important was it to deploy these models in production at Uber when you were working, especially in real time, and not have any delay in data as well as model deployments?
Yeah, like you said, Juba, it's super important. It's very, especially for some of the applications we're doing in Uber. So there's a couple of different businesses in Uber. For example, there's ride sharing, the Uber Eats, and the self-driving, etc. And for each of this business, there's probably a million different models running, just doing different things. When you start open the Uber app, you will see the ETA prediction, how far the driver is from you, how long it takes that person to get to you. For Uber Eats, that's just one example, a few others. For Uber Eats, there's restaurants and dishes recommendation. Self-driving, of course, you have to taking what the camera and other sensors collect and translate them into other signals so that machine can make a decision. So depends on the nature. I think the freshness and the low latency can be really important. For example, for ride sharing for Uber ETA, whenever as a customer you open up the app, you want to see the ETA prediction ASAP, right? Ideally, in a second or two. For Uber Eats, similarly, you want to see the fresh recommendation that whenever you click or tap around, you will see different recommendations. For self-driving, it has to be instant. It has to be instant. Otherwise, you know, don't make any mistakes. So that's how important it is to make real-time prediction and make real-time decisions right there. Well, one thing about this low latency is the model. You really have to design the model so that it can act and predict instantly. Another thing about data pipeline, we all know that the model works in such a way that you need a good model plus the input. And the data pipeline is also a key part of the machine learning application. You have to make sure that you are able to pipe in those fresh runtime production model really quickly so that you can minimize the overall delay of your prediction. So yeah, we did a lot of work in Uber in order to minimize or reduce latency, especially on the data part, as much as we could. So today, I'm saying this because a lot of people focus on the modeling or model architecture of the machine learning application. I don't know if people are paying a similar amount of attention to the data quality and data freshness part. We did actually a lot. Just for example, we build a real-time feature store. The idea is that when you can train the model offline in whatever way, like in a batch where you can load huge amount of data to train a great model. But in order for it works online, you have to make sure that all the input features are piped into the model in a matter of milliseconds. And some models are really complicated. I can give you a few examples. Well, some are relatively straightforward. For example, for ride sharing, you can tell, you can use the current location, the weather, the current traffic, which you can pre-compute it. Others you have to add dynamic features. For example, one interesting feature I remember is for this driver, out of his or her last 100 trips, how many features there was a call followed the trip. That could be interesting signal, depends on what kind of prediction you're making. And that's a dynamic feature. So in order for that to work, there's actually a complex piece of logic. So we had to write the feature infrastructure in such a way that it supported complex computation on the fly. And that really helped a lot. So I could give you another example that we could see some features like a sliding window. You can see how many features we had in this geo area in last 5 minutes. When you say it's 5 minutes, it better reflect what actually happened in last 5 minutes. Because you train the model such way offline, because you always make sure you can get everything right offline. So in order for the model actually work, the offline online data has to be consistent. And we actually did lots of work around that. So it's probably some of the best work we did to help boost Uber's business growth in some areas with machine learning.
Yeah, I can visualize how like the whole Uber backend depends a lot on fresh data, because it's like a logistics application, right? You can't miss deadlines. People are waiting for the cars to arrive or whatever prices to pay. Yeah. You also worked on the data growth initiative at Uber, right? This is more about like increasing maybe people who use Uber or drivers or passengers. Tell me a little bit about that initiative and how real-time analytics might have played a critical part in making some of the growth initiatives successful at Uber.
Absolutely. So I was on the growth team for a long time, right after I joined Uber. So growth has been the top priority for Uber for a long time, including the sign-up work, onboarding, promotion, background checks, et cetera. And for growth work, we relied heavily on data analytics for product insights, service quality, and the overall health of company growth work. All in all, data was key in our decision-making process. Obviously, we needed aggregated data to make sure that we were on track to hit our weekly and the monthly goals. At the same time, we're also collecting lots of insights from our real-time analytics to guide our day-to-day operations and decisions and react to various problems. For example, for signups, we designed it to be a state machine. As it actually has fairly complicated business logic in the whole signup process. For example, a general flow might be you need to sign up, fill out the form, upload the documents. Documents can be driver license, medical records, or even other documents, depends on the nation and the state regulations. And then if everything looks good, we would kick off a background check process on you. That background check has multiple steps itself, and then works working with various external providers. Then if that background check passes, we would inspect your vehicle, make sure it's in good conditions. So you can tell the process isn't that straightforward. To get a real human on the road and provide rides for other real human beings isn't an easy job. So, and there are many opportunities in this whole process that that it could go wrong, or people get stuck. So by having real-time analytics, we're able to tell the stats of our growth funnel at a micro level, so that we could react promptly, whether to fix a problem or just to unstuck that person. So for that application, that was actually extremely important. Also in reality, as oftentimes when people signed up to drive for Uber, they wanted that job right there in that moment, because right. They want to make some money, they want to make their ends meet. So our job was really to enable them to do so ASAP in a compliant way. So in a sense that every second count. And so it's really a combination of automation and human operations guided by our real-time analytics.
Yeah, even when I was working at Facebook, we used to depend a lot on real-time analytics to make sure people are engaged and we get more users into the system. Taking a step back away from your Uber experience, you were also the VP of engineering at NetEase. So that's a place where I know you had done a lot of experiments on creating an A/B testing framework so that you can test different models or different inputs and figure out how to handle, say, content blacklisting or some other use cases that could benefit from these kind of testing to figure out what exactly to block, for your example, from the NetEase backend. Tell me a little bit about how important was it for you to do these kind of A/B testing frameworks, which depends on real-time data, or how much is real-time important for building these experiments and deploying them in production?
Absolutely. So at NetEase, we were building one of the most popular news apps in China, and we were competing with other similarly large tech companies like Baidu and ByteDance. At a certain point, news app were really popular, and those large companies were having one. And at that time, we had over 25 million daily active users, and today we might have even more. NetEase might even have more, and they were fairly active. On average, they would spend over 1 hour on our platform, just reading, consuming all kinds of content, including videos, articles, you know, tweets, all kinds. Because it's a news app, we try to push the most up-to-date content to the hands of users. And we want to minimize the delay between the moment the content is created, is uploaded to our platform, to the moment that we recommend them to the users in a personalized way. It's not straightforward. First, there's the scale, you know, 25 million daily active users, when over a million different items uploaded every day. And the formats of the content vary a lot, right? Can be content, can be article, can be videos, polls. And the data processing pipeline is also very complicated. In that process, we had data cleaning, enhancing, natural language processing, computer vision, all that. For example, people could upload just random content. You need to identify that and get rid of it. Or people upload videos with low resolutions or with watermarks or with like blanks here and there, and we need to just remove those and keep the other useful part. So, and not even to mention the machine learning pipeline, the data pipeline in general, just to get the interesting signals and features. For example, we need to parse the text so that we need to know what the topics are for the article, even for the video. Video is even more involving. We use deep learning pipelines to extract the content, even to just identify, for example, human faces, doing face recognition for the celebrities, and adding those as interesting features. On the other hand, we build machine learning model to recommend those content. And because the models can vary, and because we want the product experience to be a positive one, we were running hundreds of experiments at the same time. So we relied on A/B testing framework to make quick product decisions so that we know, you know, which signals are positive or helping to help with the engagement, to help with the long-term retention of our products. So we use A/B testing and analytics on a daily basis so to make those critical decisions. You mentioned the content blacklisting. That's also extremely important. Just one bad actor can just ruin your platform, right? So we took it very seriously. And it's really a combination of product decisions and technology decisions. For example, the content, we often run into vulgar, duplicate, or illegal content, or hateful, abusive. You know, some are just red lines. Yeah, some are easy to decide. Some are just a little bit vague. So you need to just make a product call, and then to use. Build that technology to exactly implement your product decisions in that content blacklisting process. So we had some, because of the scale, 1 million items, it's really hard to do it by hand manually. So we have some good automation in place, mostly from machine learning models to decide this is actually, you know, across the threshold, compounded with heuristics and rules. Sometimes you do need rules. For example, when machine has had fairly good confidence, you can probably just easily just make a decision and remove the content directly. Sometimes it's sort of in the middle. You don't want to block good content, especially for creators who might spend lots of energy and time in creating. So you would send those to to human operators. They will make a decision. In that process, we not only try to make good decisions, but also make more training examples for our machine learning pipeline. So we can do that. So this is the production part. But I mentioned some of the signals. But interestingly, most useful signals are from the community. So you can imagine, like, we have this report flag button people often use. And that's extremely helpful to help us identify bad content in a promptly fashion. So again, it's real-time analytics where we find early signals and translate them, convert them into machine learning features, or just simply send them to human operators. So the sooner we can identify and get rid of bad content, the less damage we might cause as a platform to our wide audience.
Yeah. You know, you speak of bad actors. Lately in the news, it seems like, but it's been two really big cyber attacks, ransomware attacks specifically, that have, you know, caused a lot of concern, not just in the B2B space, but in the public, with the public, right? How important is it to have mutable data sets so that you can delete small pieces of data to be compliant with various regulations, right? Like the ability to forget and so on, right? Are these compliance metrics difficult to adhere to when the data set is read-only?
Yeah, super hard, I would say. I would say quickly that it's really hard to be compliant if you have a read-only data system. We all know that there has been an increasing awareness of data privacy and security for the last couple of years. Yeah. And when your data storage is designed in a read-only way, it would be pretty hard to address compliance issues and meet user-specific data asks, right? So, for example, under GDPR and CCPA, users are entitled to the removal of their personal data. With read-only data storage, that's just pretty hard to get to. Well, you can work around it, but it's just not that straightforward. That's why here at Connectly, we're adopting a privacy by design principles so that we can provide a safe and secure default data policies for our small and medium business partners, simply because most of them are not able to do so. We're considering all aspects of data security in the early stages of our development, enable our customers to access, rectify, erase, and port their data. So, for example, we would have a very strong data processing agreement. The access isn't just open. It should be need-based, even not only for our internal Connectly employees, but for their own employees. Right? Not everyone has to know everything in order to serve customers. And it would provide a strong end-to-end encryption. So yeah, overall, we were able to do it because, you know, we understood the importance of the compliance, and we designed our data engineering in such a way in the very beginning. But I've seen cases where companies, they've been there for a long time. We probably started out without knowing this before even the compliance laws of regulations came out. And the systems were also read-only, right? And so it's, they had to do a lot of additional work in order to be compliant, or just sometimes they're not even 100%, right? So I think it's really important to design your system to bear this in mind in the beginning.
If you don't mind, I know I gave quick overview at the beginning of this episode about Connectly, but would you mind just telling the audience about Connectly, what you're working on, what are some of the challenges that you're facing in real-time analytics?
Absolutely. So, and Connectly, we're trying to build a communication platform for businesses, especially for small and medium ones, to have a good relationship, meaningful relationship with their customers. The idea behind it is today, you're able to talk to your family, friends, and even your coworkers using messaging. We probably use that on a daily basis, but it's still pretty challenging to talk to businesses in a convenient way. So that's why we're trying to bring business messaging into the business world. And you want, rather today, often when you search businesses online, you might find their contact on Google Maps. For example, you might see their email or phone number. Nobody uses, very few people use email. Phone calls, they're kind of awkward, right? They're real time, they're taking time. You put on hold, you're transferring from one person to a different person, just repeating stories. So that's why we think that messaging is the future. It's near real time, it's asynchronous. You can do a lot more with messaging, not only communication, but you can pay and get paid, you can get scheduled, you can use chatbot to automate the conversation. So that's why we're doing this, to facilitate the communication part between the business and the customers. Well, challenges you mentioned, well, first there's technical one. So messaging is itself is hard. Getting messaging right is quite difficult, especially when we try to work with many external providers, including Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, Instagram, SMS, you name it, right? There will be a long tail of messaging platforms to really find a good value, because as a business, you don't want to be selective. You probably want to just anyone who wants to communicate with to you to do it in a nice way. And there's also, we just talked about data privacy and security. That's really important to win customers' trust. We need to provide a pretty safe and default and strict data policy by default. There's when we get to the transaction, we're not yet, but we'll get to transaction payment processing one day. That's just probably also pretty challenging. So that's why we're spending a lot of time in the beginning to develop a strong foundation from both product and engineering perspective, so that we are ready to get to scale and in a safe way. That's what we're focusing on right now.
Awesome. Well, if you could give other engineering leaders one piece of advice based on your expertise and your experience, what would that piece of advice be? And why would you give that piece of advice specifically?
Definitely. My advice would be invest in your data foundation, including data engineering, policy, tools, like Rock said, and the culture from the very beginning. Through the years of work, I've seen where people who invest a lot in data and they were able to get it, and for those who were able to get it right, particularly when scaling a business, when scaling, they benefit so much from the early work, whether it's just good decision making or just, you know, accurate business insights, et cetera. So with more accurate and fresh data, you probably can make some good, better business decisions. Now, on the other hand, I've seen cases where people underinvested, and on the later on, they will be constantly firefighting or just spend a 10x more time to repay the tech debt while probably making suboptimal decisions due to the poor quality data, because the data is not fresh, is lag, or just, you know, could be just wrong data, right? So yeah, do it early, do it right.
Sage advice for sure. That will do it for this episode of Why Wait. Yandong and Dhruba, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. We really appreciate it. You can learn more about Connectly at connectly.ai and email them at careers@connectly.com. If you have questions, they are hiring engineers and marketing at this time as well. If you found today's episode insightful, please share the episode, help us grow our following and share the thought leadership and insights on real-time analytics with your peers. The Why Wait broadcast is brought to you by Rockset. At Rockset, we're building a real-time analytics cloud-based platform. Check us out at rockset.com and you can try us for free for 2 weeks. We also provide $300 in free trial credits for that time frame. So once again, thank you again for joining. And stay tuned for our next episode. Cheers.
Bye, Yandong.